Okay. Good morning, everybody. Boker Tov, thank you for coming. Thank you for braving the warm weather. Don't worry, it'll be soon be the winter, and we'll be remembering the warm weather with fondness. We are on sheet number 7 of a series of 10, please God, which will deal with this issue of Torah text and transmission. Today's sheet is very specifically oriented towards the 9 days as well, but it fits perfectly within exactly where we are in the context of Torah text and transmission. Last time, in sheet number 6, we looked at machloket as truth. What is truth? Why is there machloket? Multiple truths, etc. And I'd like to call that, if you want, good machloket. We like the idea of machloket, because it reflects multiple opinions, and through those multiple opinions you get closer to whatever understanding of MS we can get to. And last time we spoke about that. But a little bit like cholesterol, there's good cholesterol and there's bad cholesterol. And there's good machlokes and there's bad machlokes. Okay? And today I want to look at the flip side of the coin. There's such a thing as bad machlokes. Oh, so we'll see how exactly that fits in. We're used to understanding there's such a thing as machlokesh l'shem shamayim, and machlokesh shelo l'shem shamayim. And the famous Mishnah in Pirkei Avot says, what is an example of machloket l'shem shamayim? It's Hillel and Shammai. Machloket shelo l'shem shamayim is Korach v'Adato. Okay. I would like to show you today that actually machloket l'shem shamayim, even if it's l'shem shamayim, can still be very destructive. And how that developed over the end of the Second Temple period and took it into a new paradigm, which we'll talk about next week, which is the need for a new thing called the Talmud. Originally the Mishnah, then the Gemara, and today we're going to chart why we moved from a place that we didn't need a Talmud to a place that we then did need a Talmud. And it's important to understand that, because now oral law, the Torah Shebaal Peh, works off the back of the Talmud. And we didn't always have one, and the question is, why did we need one, and why didn't we ever have a new one? That we'll talk about next week. But for now, let's pick up today this issue of these paradigm shifts. Look at this first source in Sukkah, and you'll see what I'm talking about. Shebetchila, kshenishtachacha Torah. Originally, when Torah was nishtachacha. Now, shichacha can be translated as forgotten. But I think in this context, it doesn't mean that everybody forgot it. It means it went into some kind of a crisis. There was a crisis which required a new paradigm, a new shift into a new approach. Originally when this happened, me Israel and the Jewish people, Allah Ezra mi Bavel v'yasta. Someone came to save the day, who was Ezra from Bavel, from Chutz La'aretz, came and started a new system which we talked a little bit about. Ezra HaSofer, yeah. That's the next source. That is exactly the next source. You're already ahead of the sources. Exactly. So we'll see number 2, but hold on, because we're still in the middle of number 1. Ezra came from Babel and refounded, reorganized the Torah. Chazra v'nishtachacha, he went into a new crisis. Ala Hillel Habavli. Hillel came from Babel, v'yasta, and re-established the Torah. Chazra v'nishtachacha, the third time he went into crisis, Alu Rabbi Chiya ubanav. Rabbi Chiya and his children came up from Babel, v'yasta, and they re-established it as well. And each of these three pivotal points, Ezra, Hillel, Rabbi Chisda, describes a new important turn of or change of gear in the Torah Shebaal Peh process. We'll talk about Ezra and Hillel today, and Rabbi Chiya, which is really the beginning of the process of Gemara, we'll talk about Be'ezrat Hashem next time. One thing I would point out is that there is a common theme here of things falling apart a little bit in Israel, and Jews from Chutz La'aretz coming to Israel and saving the day. I'm not trying to just read that in because it makes me feel better as someone from London or whatever, but there is a theme that we see that people from Chutz La'aretz bring a different kind of Torah to Eretz Yisrael, which can re-establish and reinvigorate a lot of what is going on there. We've seen this all through the ages, and we see this today. And I think that in that sense, Babel represents this idea of Chutz La'aretz, and this is an ongoing process. What are these three stages? So we just heard here Ezra. Ezra was the first, and let's look at number 2. Tanya, so the Gemara says Sanhedrin. Rabbi Yossi Omer, Ru'i haya Ezra shin titi, naten Torah al yadol Yisrael. Exactly what you just said. Ezra was worthy of being the one to receive the Torah. Il malakad Moshe, had not Moshe preceded him. And then he brings a proof. But Moshe, who Omer, with Moshe, it says, Moshe Allah, Elohe Elokim, Moshe went up Aliyah to God, up the mountain. Now Ezra, who Omer, and Ezra says, who Ezra Allah mi Babel, he made Aliyah from Babel. Interesting, the Aliyah to Eretz Israel is compared to the Aliyah of Moshe up to Har Sinai. Ma Aliyah Ha'amur Kam Torah, just as the original Aliyah from Moshe was to receive Torah, Af Aliyah Ha'amur Lahalan Torah, so too Ezra's Aliyah was for Torah. Similarly, B'Moshe Hu Omer V'Otitzi V'Hashem V'Eitahi Lilmod or Lilamed Etchem, sorry, Chukimu Mishpatim, Moshe says, God told me to teach you these laws. Ezra Hu Omer, what does it say about Ezra? Ki Ezra Hechin Levavot Lidrosh Et Torah Hashem La'asot Lilamed B'Yisrael Chukimu Mishpatim. And this word Lidrosh, we talked about in, I think, Shin number 2 or 3, is a very important word. Ezra represented a shift to something we call Drash. Drash means that you don't just have Masorah coming from Sinai, but you have interpretation. You have textual analysis. And we talked a little bit about this, at the shift from Nevuah into Chochmah. I can't remember which year that was, maybe 4, where we talked about the fact that the Nevuah worked in a different system. During the time of the first temple, where Nevi'im were on every street corner, the halachic system may have had a different feel to it. Then once the Nevi'im ended, and we had to shift, and we said the whole world shifted. The Greek world shifted from a world of paganism to a world of philosophy, of chokhmah, of thought. Similarly, the Jewish world shifted from a world of Avodah Zarah, remember the Yetzer Hara for Avodah Zarah, which went side by side with Nevuah, this being tied in to Shamayim somehow, for the good and not for the good, shifted to the idea of chokhmah, which is where the Torah Shvar Peh, as we know it, began to take shape. We even saw a comment, if you remember, from Rav Moshe Glasner, from Rav Tzadok HaKohen of Lublin. This was back in the Shir a few weeks ago. The Torah Shvar Peh, as we know it, began at the time of Ezra. Ah, what about the 700-800 years of Torah from Sinai up until Ezra? It was a different system. It was based, of course, on the Chumash, and it was based on the Torah, but it didn't look like the Torah we know and love today with the structures. And we see this in the time of Ezra. Most of the rabbinic laws that make up the way that we view Judaism today were introduced at the time of Ezra. Think about it. Chanukah, Purim, Tfilah, Brachot, Kiddush, Havdalah, a lot of the things that we, that may be rooted in Torah ideas, they all, in terms of structure, come from Ezra. So Ezra really was the first paradigm shift, which I'm not going to talk about in detail. Paradigm means, what does paradigm mean? Paradigm means the model that we were working within. The model of the first temple was a model of Nevuah. Paradigm is English, I think. Listen, I come from Leeds, so I can't guarantee that what I say is good English anyway. It could be that I'm... But the paradigm with a G. I think I'm using it the right sense. Ezra established most of the rabbinic structure that we have. Think about from the minute you get up in the morning to when you go to sleep, how many of the mitzvahs you do are darabanan and how many are daraisa? So many of the things we do are darabanan. And most of that structure found its way into Judaism at the time of Ezra. This was a major paradigm, this is a major model shift. But of course, the Second Temple period, we know that Ezra came and established the Second Temple. Look at number 4. Anshei Knesset HaGedolah, which is, Ezra was amongst them. Tiknu Lehem Yisrael Brachot, Tfilot, Kedushot, V'Havdalot. All that structure of our connection with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And they had a super duper Sanhedrin. Look at number 5. The Masnitzit Hana Meir V'Ezrim Zekenim. They had 120 elders. Ubehem kamu Nevi'im, and at the beginning there were the last of the Nevi'im, Malachi, Zechariah, Haggai, etc. Tiknu Shmona Esre Brochas Al HaSeder. They made the Shmona Esrei the way we have it today. The truth is we already have Shah Esrei today. It's an amazing thing that we still call it Shmona Esrei a good 1900 years after it hadn't been Shmona Esrei anymore. We have long memories, and we still call it that. Why, incidentally, were there 120? How many should be on the Sanhedrin? 70. We know this from the Chumash in Parshat Va'alotcha. Moshe is told by God, bring together 70 people, establish a new Sanhedrin. Why 120? So if you look, I brought you a couple of lines from Rav Reuven Margolius. Rav Reuven Margolius wrote a very interesting, little, very small sefer called Yesod HaMishnah Va'arichata, the foundation of the Mishnah and how it was all put together. And he asked this question. Good number 6, a lesser known source. Lama eifa hechivu b'tzkufat aliyat Ezra. Why did they expand at the time of aliyat Ezra et hamisbar, the number of the Sanhedrin, from 70 to 120? Hasibahi, the reason is as follows. Ya'an she'az achrei shnot hagalut. It was after this period of exile, these years in Babel.
Shivim shana.
Hutzruchu lechonen michadash hakarat hamosad hazeh. They had to really establish from afresh this whole new institution. But Torah merkat kol chachmi Yisrael. They needed to bring everybody on board. Remember, the situation after the first galut was pretty dire. Look at the book of Nehemiah. People were intermarried. People had lost their understanding of Hebrew. They'd lost their Jewish culture. There was no structure for a Jew to live in Chutz La'aretz, because all they had was the first temple. They had Beit HaMikdash, Kohanim, Nevi'im. None of those things exist in Babel. So you take the, if you like, the Jew out of Israel and put them in Chutz La'aretz, they fell apart. A little bit like, and this is my opinion, you may disagree with me, you sometimes find with secular Israelis today, when they leave Israel and they go to live in Chutz La'aretz, it's hard sometimes for them to fall into the community structures that we know from having grown up in Chutz La'aretz are what keep Jews in Chutz La'aretz. Because here in Israel, how do you, my wife had a very sad but telling experience once. There was an Israeli couple living down the road from us, a non-religious couple in London, and my wife went to send her to give her Mishloach Manos on Purim. Find someone that you don't know, give them a shlach manas, that's the mitzvah. She knocked on the door and she said, I brought you, my wife's there dressed as, I don't know what, she was dressed as a nun or something like that. So this Israeli woman opens the door and she says, yes, shalom. She says, I've come to bring you a present. She goes, why? She goes, it's Purim. So the woman starts crying. She goes, I had no idea. I've got kids, I would have dressed them up, I would have done something, I have no idea. Why does she have no idea? Because in Israel she knows it's Purim, because on the TV they say Purim Megia. But here in London there's no one on the TV to tell you Happy Purim. You have to be connected with systems, and the Jews in Galut, in Babel, they had no systems. They had no shuls, they had no tefillah, they had no kaddish. What's that? That's why they cried. How are we going to function in Babel without Beit HaMikdash? So Ezra understood this. And Ezra says, we need to create systems, because even though we're back, we're not going to be back for long. And this is an interesting theme. Rav Yaakov Kamenevsky, in his Perush on the Chumash, the Emes Yaakov, has a long piece about how the Second Temple period, even though we had a Beit Mikdash, and we had the structures of Geula, it wasn't Geula. It was really Galut. Which is very interesting, because it has certain parallels for the world in which we live in today. You can live in Eretz Israel, but it's not be really the Geula that you think it could be. For example, he says, why did they bring Aramaic back with them into the vernacular? Why did they bring all the names of the months? What are the names of the Hebrew months? Nisan, Iyar, Sivan, Tammuz. They're all Babylonian gods. They're pagan gods. Tammuz was a classical Babylonian god. Why would you pick a name of a Babylonian god and bring it into Eretz Israel? Why not call the months the way the Chumash calls the months? Chodesh HaRishon, Chodesh HaSheni, Chodesh HaShlishi. No, we gave them all names, like in England. In English, January, February, March, April. Also pagans. Interestingly, the days of the week didn't go that way. And they kept the Yom Rishon, Yom Sheni, Yom Shlishi. Even though in English, of course, because of Shabbat, because they're counting towards Shabbat. But, says Rav Yaakov, the reason we brought these pagan things into Israel is to remind us we do not anymore live in a Geula. We may have a Beit HaMikdash, he said, down in the Second Temple, but we're not our own boss. We are controlled by, throughout the Second Temple period, first the Persians, then the Greeks, then with a brief period of independence, we'll talk about it in a minute, then the Romans, etc. This was still a time of Galut, and the Anshei Knesset HaGedola had to create these systems that one day would stand us in good stead when we eventually went back into Galut. So this is, I'm not going to get drawn into this question, which is an interesting question. What we seem to have today is something in the middle. That's the problem. It's clearly to argue that what we have today is exactly the way we existed in 16th century Poland is ridiculous. To argue that we live today in the Geula Shleima in all its manifestations is equally ridiculous. So what is it? So is it Abchalti de Geulta? Is it Ikvus of the Mashiach? You know, we should have a series on Rav Kook and Rav Soloveitchik and others and different people who look at this in different ways. And I can't get drawn into this now, even though I'd love to. What we have today is something which is difficult to interpret. But we have something. You can't ignore the religious significance of 5.5 million Jews returning to Eretz Israel. But that religious significance could be negative, as well as positive. If you're the Satmar Rebbe, and you write by Yoel Moshe, you can bring 200 sources to show how what's happening today is a disaster, religiously. If you're a religious Zionist, you could bring 200 sources, probably half of them the same sources, to argue exactly the opposite, to show that what's happening today is the beginning of something amazing, but I'm not getting drawn into that. I already got drawn into it for 2 minutes, but no more. So why, he says, did we have 120? To build this new system that needed to be really brought home to the people. Just look at the end of number 6. Aval, in the second to the last line, Aval kasha'an nifturu achrei kein, as the men of the Anshei Knesset Gedolah began to die off, lo sifu limanot bimromam, they didn't replace them. They let the number gradually go down. Okay? The havu yamim she mitzvar chavereha hayu mea. And then eventually there were 100. The achrei kein 88. And then they were 88. The kein pachatu b'minyan ad shechazru l'minyan shivu. Interesting historical account that how the 120 super Sanhedrin gradually returned to be the Sanhedrin that we know as a 70 Sanhedrin. But, as I said before, we were not in control of our own destiny. We have a list at the bottom of the page here, number 1, taken from Pirkei Avot, of the major people who were the leaders of the Jewish people during the Second Temple period, Shimon HaTzadik, the Zugot, as we call them, the Pairs, down to Hillel and Shammai, who lived, of course, at the time of the Romans. And we have to look a little bit at how that Second Temple period worked. How we ended up going from a place of relative security to eventually a Churban, and this, of course, is the 9 days, and we need to think about this. What happened during that process, and how did that affect Perish Shabbat? So let's flip over to page 2. What is bad machloket? Over the page 2. Source number 8 on page 2. Over on page 2, source number 8. What is bad machloket? So if you look here, the Mishnah says the following. Mishemet Yossi ben Yo'ezer, and Yossi ben Yo'ezer was one of the first Zugot. He was living around the time of the Chashmonaim, the beginning of the Chashmonaim. Everybody in this room knows the story of Hanukkah, how there was a revolt against Antiochus Epiphanes, by Matityahu and the Chashmonaim and the Machabim, etc. And they replaced Greek rule with an independent Jewish Chashmonaim rule. Okay, for a brief period. Yossi ben Yo'ezer was one of the people who was in charge of the Sanhedrin at that time. When Yossi Yo'ezer died, Yossi ben Yo'ezer ish Sreda, Yossi ben Yehuda ish Yerushalayim, when these two Yossis died, batla ha'eshkolot. That was the end of the eshkolot. What are the eshkolot? It's got nothing to do with grapefruits. I can tell you that now, okay? The eshkolot, says the Gemara. Oh, anashim gedolim. My eshkolot, says the Gemara. I'm a Rav Yehuda, I'm a Shmuel. Ish shehakol bo. Ish shehakol bo. That's what an eshkol is. I remember recently when we were living in Haranov, so Rav Rafi Feuerstein, who is one of the main rabbanim there in Haranov, so his father was Professor Reuven Feuerstein. Very famous man. Achieved unbelievable things. And when he died, the sign went up with the black line around it. It called him Ish Eshkolot. Ish Eshkolot. And I remember somebody came in to me, they didn't know what the word meant. They said, I don't understand what's got to do with grapefruits. And the answer is, that's Eshkoliot. Eshkolot means Isha Kolbo. Someone who is an all-rounder of high standard. Yes.
What about Ramat Eshkol?
Ramat Eshkol, that's named after Levi Eshkol. Levi Eshkol, who was the Prime Minister of Israel in 1967, how he got the name Eshkol is a good question, which I don't know the answer to, because I would put money on the fact that his name was not Eshkol originally.
Skolnik.
That makes sense. Skolnik went to Eshkol. Okay. Netanyahu was not called Netanyahu. What was he called originally? Do you know? Good test question. Do you know? Milikovsky. Milikovsky. Milikovsky, he went to Netanyahu. His grandfather went to Netanyahu. Anyway, that's not for 9. Look at number 9. What is Shahakolbo? What is the fact that this Ish Eshkol has everything in it? So Rashi says a very important line. Torah ba'amita. Torah in its authentic emet Ve'en dofi v'shichacha u'machloket. Torah which exists without dofi, what's dofi? Duplicitousness, hypocrisy, double standards of different kinds. Shichacha, forgetfulness, and machloket, and disagreement. That is what we had. That is the kind of Torah that we had in those days. The question is, why did that stop? What ended? Why did we suddenly get a Torah, or maybe not suddenly, but over time, we ended up with a Torah which was now full of dofi, shichacha, and machloket. This is why I'm calling this bad machloket. Look at number 10. Tnan Hasam, Mishimet Yosef ben Yoezer, Ishreid of Yosef ben Yochanan, the Ish Yerushalayim, Bakla Eshkolat Isha Kolbo. This is the Gemara in Tzmura, which the Gemara before was referencing. The Amar of Yehuda Amar Shmuel, Kol Eshkolot, She'amdu Lahem Li Yisrael Miyamot Moshe Ad Shemet Yosef ben Yoezer. All these Eshkolot who lived from the time of Moshe up until the beginning or middle of the Second Temple, Hayul Meidin Torah Kemoshe Rabbeinu. Somehow or other they were able to learn Torah like Moshe in an authentic way. Mikan ve'elech, from this point onwards, lo ha'yu lemeidin Torah k'Moshe Rabbeinu. Something went wrong. They couldn't learn Torah in the way of Moshe Rabbeinu. And again, we need to work out what went wrong. And to understand what went wrong, we need to look at the most classic machloket, bad machloket of the time. Have a look here in the Gemara in Chagiga number 11. Yosi ben Yo'ezer amar shelo lismoch. What's going on here? We're talking about smicha. Not smicha as in rabbinic smicha, but when you take an animal to the Beit HaMikdash, you take a korban chatat. Or you take a korban shlamim. So one of the halachot, the beginning of Pasha, Sefer Vayikra, it says that you have to put your hands on the animal, and you have to do smicha. Smicha is a kind, it means literally resting. It's a kind of transferal process. That you transfer yourself, as it were, mentally, psychologically, spiritually, into the persona of the animal. And then when the animal goes up to shamayim, in whatever day that means, on the mizbeach, it's ke'ilu, it's as if you transferred yourself. For the good or for the bad. Meaning, if you brought a korban chatat, because you felt the need to do tshuva. So as you did smicha, you would say vidui. And the vidui is part of the smicha process. And then when the animal goes up to shamayim, it's you're saying, ke'ilu, this deserves to be me, but I've done tshuva. If you brought a shlamim, which is for a happy, joyous occasion, you wouldn't say vidui. Why you say vidui over shlamim? So what would you sing or say as you did smicha? You sing shira, sing hallel. You'd say, when this animal goes up to shamayim, on the contrary, it's, I wish I could go up and bond with HaKadosh Baruch Hu, but it's through the animal. So smicha was a very important part of the process. The Gemara here has a question. That right here, in the time of the Zugot, where the Eshkolot ended, they ended up with a machloket, which was, do you do smicha on Yom Tov? No, I'm not getting into all the technicalities, but the problem is, now they had a halacha of muksa. They didn't used to have muksa back in the first temple period. It was a creation, maybe from the origin from David HaMelech onward, there was an idea of muksa. But muksa in its halachic ramifications comes in the time of Nehemiah. So, now they have a problem. We need to do smicha. We're bringing a private korban. But we can't use an animal on the onset. We can't rest on an animal because the animal is muksa. Which overrides which? Do you do smicha? Does the muksa get set aside for the mitzvah of the korban? Or does the smicha get it set aside because it's yonsef and you can't do smicha? So, number 10. Number 11, excuse me. So, Yosef ben Yoezer and Yosef ben Yochanan Omar Lismoich. Yoshuv ben Parachia Omer Shelo Lismoch. Sorry, let's go from the beginning. Yosef ben Yoezer Omer Shelo Lismoch. Yosef ben Yoezer says, no, don't do smicha. Yosef ben Yochanan Omer Lismach. And his partner says, yes, do smicha. Then the next generation, Yeshua ben Parachia, Omer Shelo Lismach. Yeshua ben Parachia, who in parentheses, Chazal identified as the Rebbe of Yeshu, okay, which is interesting, because that comes a couple of hundred years before, under Christian dating, we're accustomed to understand the whole narrative of Christianity and the origins of Christianity. According to the Gemara in Gittin and other places, Yeshua ben Parachi was actually the Rebbe of Yeshua, and how that happened is an interesting story, which is not for now, that's just in parentheses. But he said, Shelo lismoch, don't do smicha. Nite ha'arbeli, omer lismoch. He said, yes, do smicha. Next generation. Yehuda ben Tamai, omer shelo lismoch. Yehuda ben Tamai said, don't do smicha. Shimon ben Shetach, who we'll see in a minute, more of, Omer Lismoch, said, yes, do smicha. Shamaya, next generation down, Omer Lismoch. Avtalion, Omer Shelo Lismoch. Then finally, Hillel, Umenachem, Lo Nechlekot. Who was Menachem? Ever heard of Menachem? Hillel and Menachem were the next pair. They didn't have a disagreement, which is great. But Yatsa Menachem. Menachem left. Now, that's another story which is I'm not going to get into. What happened to Menachem? And why did he leave? And where did he go? And it actually turns out that Menachem, who was one of the leaders of the Jewish people, he kind of went off into maybe the Sadducees, or he went off into the Roman world, into the Greek world. It was a bit of a kind of hushed up story, but it's not hushed up that much, and you can find the sources on it if you want, but I'm not getting into that. Now, Menachem left. I'm lots of teasers today that you can go and look at elsewhere. Nichnas Shammai, and then Shammai took his place, which you recognize the name. Shammai omer shelo lismoch. Shammai said not to do smicha. Hillel omer lismoch. He said yes to do smicha. And the machloket continued. Rashi, on this machloket, said, this is not just any machloket. Says number 12, Rashi, v'zohi machloket rishona shehaita b'chachmei Yisrael. This was the first machloket that the Jewish rabbis ever had. Now that's a strange statement. Really? This was the first machloket? We're living already 1,000 years after Sinai. No one's ever disagreed on anything before. I know for a fact that they have, because every page of the Chumash, there are people arguing with everybody else. Korach, Datan, Aviram, you name it, they're all arguing. Nadav, Avihu, everyone's having their own understandings. Kain and Hevel, that's even before the Torah. How can it be that this is the first machloket? So, what I want to say, what's that?
Maybe they never solved it.
Oh, so that's, I think, the answer. It's not that this was the first machloket, but this is the first time they could never resolve the machloket. And it was an ongoing.
They could never
resolve it. They could never solve it. They could never find a solution. And it was a machloket that went on and on and on and on until eventually it was just left as a machloket. The question is, why did that happen? And why had that not happened before? Yes?
Well, if it's a yokach, and the issue was the smoke or low smoke, the korban is going home. In other words, the kohanim are going to deal with the animal.
For sure, they're going to bring the korban.
They're going to bring the korban.
Yes.
So we're saying the korban is allowed.
Yes.
It's not muktzah.
For sure. Yes, correct.
But an outsider who comes to do something else.
Yes.
Then it becomes muktzah.
Right. Or not it becomes muktzah, but smicha involves you actually leaning on and moving the animal. Bringing the korban doesn't necessarily... Bringing the korban is the... you're interesting. Bringing the korban for sure overrides muktzah. The question is, the smicha an essential part of bringing the korban? You could bring it without the smicha. Do you need to do that in order to bring the korban? Why was this machloket unable to be resolved? And that's what I want to look at now. How did they resolve machloket up until then? Now, we talked last time about machloket being a wonderful thing. There has to be, you know, different opinions, and we make a bracha on that, etc., etc. But remember the medrash that we saw last time, when God gives to Moshe multiple opinions as to how to understand Torah. Moshe turns around to God and says, that's lovely, but we need some clarity. I can't tell people 98 different ways of understanding our question. If you call up the rabbi and you say, what's the answer? And he gives you a drasha with 98 different ways to understand it, that's useless. There has to be clarity. Where did that clarity come from? So remember that medrash, God says, it's fine. The Sanhedrin, if the majority say it's osa, then it's osa. And if the majority say it's mutar, it's mutar.
Achrabim
lahatos. Exactly. Look at number 30. Says the Rambam, Kashihaya Beit Din Agadol time, when there used to be a Beit Din Agadol, that's the Sanhedrin, Lo Haita Machlokas B'Yisrael, there was no Machlokas. Doesn't mean there was no disagreement. It means there was no ongoing bad Machlokas. El Kol Din Shenol Abos Afek, Le'echel Mi'Yisrael, Shoyel Le'Beit Din She'er Be'ira. If you had a question, you'd go to your local Beit Din. Im Yadu, if they knew the answer, Amrullah, they would tell you. The imlav, and if they didn't know, Hari Hashoyal im Oysa Beistin, that the questioner with the Beistin would go, or im Shluchov, or with its representative, Olim Yerushalayim. They'd go up to Yerushalayim, Vashonim le Beistin Sheba Harabais. They would ask the first level Beit Din on Harabais, which was a Beit Din of 23, not the final one. Im Yadu, if they knew, Amra, they say this is the answer. The imlav, and if not, Hakol Baim le Beistin Sheal Petah Hazara. They'd come to the next level up, which is at the entrance to the Azara. Again, not yet the final one. Im Yadu, if they knew the answer, Amru Lahem, they would tell them. Ve'im Lav, and if not, Hakol Ba'im Lelishkas Agazis, they would all come to the chamber of hewn stone where the real Sanhedrin sat, the Beis Din Agadol V'Shoilem. And they'd ask them. Im yahadavar shenola bahasafik lekol. Okay, yadua. If the question that they, if the answer was no, one second, etzel beis sinagodol with the Sanhedrin. So bein mipi akabala, either through a masorah from Sinai, bein mipi midah shedonuba, or because of one of the drushes that they could make, the interpretation they could give to the posik to get to the answer. Oimer miyad. So they tell them this is the answer. Im loy hayadavar borur. Etzel based in Hagadol, if it wasn't clear to them in the Sanhedrin, done in boy Beshatam, they would then debate it. V'noisin b'davar, and they would go back and forth and discuss it. Ashiyaskimu kolam, until they reach the unanimous answer. Or, ya'amdu l'minyan, or they take a vote. V'yelchu achrei harov, just like you said. They'd go after the rabbim, and that's why the Sanhedrin always had an odd number. It was actually 71. It wasn't 70, it was 71. You could always get a majority. The Yomru Lekala Shoelim, and they would say to the questioners, Kach Halakha, this is the Halakha, B'hochim Lahem, and now you can go home happy. No machlokas will ultimately be allowed to remain. It will be resolved, says the Rambam now, Mishabatl, based in Agadu. But once the Sanhedrin ceased to function, Rasa machlokas b'Yisrael. Then there was ongoing, increasing machlokas. One group of people, or one rabbi would say, I think it's tamei, and would give its reasons. Another group would say, tahor, v'noisin tam l'dvarav. Ze oiseh, ze matir. And then you had factions, you had groups. And each follows a different psak. And there is no one single resolution. And you now have different groups of people in halacha. Which is not the way it was meant to be. So the Rambam very clearly identifies that the reason that we ended up with machlokas that we didn't want was practical. It was the breakdown of the Sanhedrin. That's why the machlokas about smicha could not be resolved, because the Sanhedrin didn't break down overnight. It broke down gradually over a period of time. Even before the Beit HaMikdash was destroyed, the Sanhedrin was actually gone. Just turn over to page number 3 for a second. And have a look. In number 16, the Gemara says, Arba'im Shana, already 40 years, Ad Shelo Charev HaBayis, before the Beit HaMikdash was destroyed, Galta La Sanhedrin, the Sanhedrin exiled itself. V'yashvelo b'chanuyot, and it went to sit in Yerushalayim, in the shops. L'may hilchaseh, for what relevance does that have? Sheloi danu dinei nefashos, they no longer have the power to be a full Sanhedrin. And the breakdown, I just went on to page number 3, to source 16, and the breakdown of society in the Second Temple period was reflected by a breakdown in the Torah authority of the Sanhedrin and in the structure of the halacha. Meaning, we all know the concept of sinat chinam, and we'll talk a little bit more about it in a minute. Sinat chinam on a societal level affects everything, not just social interactions, but it affects the whole halachic process. If the Sanhedrin is no longer functioning because you're in a factional fight between Sadducees and Pharisees and Essenes and all of the kind of religious group sects that grew up at the end of the Second Temple, then the Sanhedrin can no longer work properly. Apart from the fact that the Hashmonaim, which were the great hope, the independence from the Greeks, quickly themselves dissolved into disaster. The Hashmonaim, by the time you get to the next generation and the grandchildren of the Hashmonaim, they were fighting each other. First of all, you have Alexander Yanai, who is married to Shlomzion Hamalka, who himself went on a rampage through, and that's the source, I'm not going to go through it now, but for your later reference, source number 14 is the Gemara that describes how Alexander Yanai killed almost everybody on the Sanhedrin because he was encouraged to by other people who said that the rabbis were rebelling against him, to the point that there was nobody left. Shlomzion Hamalka had to sneak in her brother, Shimon ben Shetach, back into the picture. Look at number 15 for a second that I will read while we're on page 3. Yanai Malka u'Malkasa, Yanai the Melech and the Queen, Kricho Rivta Bahadi Hadani, they were having dinner, they were having a meal at the palace. And because they killed out all of the rabbis, it was a secular kingdom now. There were no rabbinic figures. They had no one to bench. He can't bench. He doesn't have to bench. She's not going to bench. No one can bench. Alexander Yanai. Number 15. Alexander Yanai, who was the grandson, great-grandchildren of the original Hashmonaim, So Amalah Ledivisu, he said to his wife, of course, if in doubt, ask your wife, that's the answer. Man Yav Lagavra Dumavarichlan, what are we going to do, sweetheart? Who's going to bench for us? So she said to him, Amrale, she says to him, Ishkabali, swear to me. De'i maisina lach gavra, if I can find you someone to bench, de'loi matarale, you won't bother him, you won't kill him, you won't do what you did to everybody else. Ishkabali promises her. So what does she do? I see Sele Shimon ben Shetach. She brings out from hiding her brother Shimon ben Shetach. Okay? But Oise ben Didei Ledidan, he sat. She sat in between the two of them. Meaning, I think this Gemara is not just an account of what the king and queen did after dinner, but it's a narrative as to how they had to bring secretly and slowly and quietly back the key Torah figures after the massacres and the Sanhedrin having gone underground. Many of them had to flee to Egypt. Meaning, it was a mess. If you want to know why the Sanhedrin wasn't working, it's because long before the Churban's Bayis Sheni, it was a big mess. Yes?
It's an interesting inference here. He killed all these Rabbonim, but he still wanted to bench after he ate.
You know, it's very interesting. Alexander Yanai is painted as a heretic, but a heretic who is influenced by other people a lot. The source number 14, which I'm not going to go through now, is when they tell him to kill, when he's encouraged to kill the rabbis, so his immediate reaction is, well, what's going to be with the Torah? Which is a nice, firm reaction, and they convince him, ah, no, Torah Shebichtav is enough, Torah Shebalpeh we don't need. And he goes, okay, that'll do. I mean, Alexander Yanai is, there's something there that wants to be traditional, but he's influenced by a lot of other people. To the point that, as I said, the Sanhedrin had really ceased to function in any serious way, and Machlokas began to increase. Look at number 17.
Why did they want to bump off the Sanhedrin?
Because there was a power struggle. Because the rabbis told people what to do. The rabbi stood up to Alexander Yanai and said to him, you want to be the king, you want to be the Kohen Gadol, meaning the Chashmonaim were Kohenim. And they wanted to be not only the Kohanim, but also the kings. There is a process in Jewish society of a division of powers. There are the kings, and there are the Kohanim, and they're not the same people. And the rabbis turned to Alexander Yanai. That's the job of the Nevi'im and then the rabbis to speak truth to power, and said, you can't do this. No one wants to hear that. So he killed them. That's how most dictators deal with people who don't like them, or who disagree with them. Look at number 17. Mishirabu Zchuchei Halev. From when the Zchuchei Halev increased, Ravu Machlokas B'Yisrael. Again, there's a direct link between who are these Zchuchei Halev, we'll see in a minute, and Machlokas in the Jewish Torah. Hein Hein Shochtei Damim. Murderers. Meaning there was a societal breakdown, and that breakdown crept also into the Bet Midrash. And I want to show you now a couple of sources, some of them are actually quite shocking in some ways, as to how by the time you got to the end of the Second Temple period, that the societal breakdown was not only out in the court, in the politics, but it was right there in the Bet Midrash. Have a look at number 18. And now we'll go through in order, we won't skip around, so that everyone can follow through to the end. Number 18, Mishurabu Talmidei Shammai VeHillel, says the Tosefta, from when Shammai and Hillel's students increased, Sheloi Shimshu Kal Tzarf, they weren't able to learn properly. Because of all the politics, because of all the societal upheaval, they weren't able to sit and properly learn from their Rebbeim. Harbu Machlokas B'Yisrael, the Machlokas increased, V'nasa Shtei Torahs, and they became two Torahs. Two Torahs, a schism. We're now talking schism. Hillel and Shammai themselves hardly disagreed on anything. It's worth remembering. Five or six things. But Beit Hillel and Beit Shammai turned the Torah into two Torahs, which obviously is disastrous. Most of the time, as we saw in a previous source, Hillel were the majority. But occasionally, Beit Shammai were able to push themselves into the majority. Look at the following three sources and you'll see a fascinating account. Look at number 19. The Elu, says the Mishnah in Shabbos, Mina Halachot, She'amru Ba'aliyat Hananya ben Chizkiah ben Guria. There was a Beit Shammai rabbi called Hananya ben Chizkiah ben Gurion. This, by the way, is where the name Ben Gurion comes from. Okay? He also was an Gruen, I think he was, who became a Ben-Gurion, okay, David Ben-Gurion. So there was a rabbi at the time of the Second Temple, Kesha'alu Levakro, when they went up to visit him, Nimnu, they made accounts, V'ravu Beishamai al Beit Hillel. Oh, they got a majority, Beishamai. And there and then they pushed through legislation. Once they get a majority, they push it through. V'yudchet Dvarim Gazru Bobayom. And there on that day, they initiated the 18 things. Now, what are the 18 Dvarim? This is very famous at the beginning of the Gemara and Shabbat. It goes through these 18 things. We'll see in a minute what kind of things Beis Shammai felt the need to push through at this moment. But have a look, first of all, at number 20. Again, on this idea. Eilu min ha-halacha sha'amru ba'aliyat Hananya ben Chizkiya ben Gurion. Kesha'alu levakro nimnu v'rabu Beis Shammai al Beis Hillel. Okay, shmona es adava gazru baba yom. That's exactly the same as we saw before. But now it adds the following. V'haya oisa hayom. And that day was kasha lahem li Yisrael. Was disastrous, was difficult for the Jews. Kiyom shenasa bo ha'egel. Like the day that they worshipped the golden calf. Why? What's so terrible? The Beis Shammai suddenly get a majority and they push through legislation. Why is that day so terrible? So I'll tell you, look at 21. Says the Yerushalmi, O Tahayom, Hayakash Yisrael Kiyom Shenasa Boha Egel. Why was that day like the day that they worshipped the Egel? Tana Rabbi Yeshua, okay, Unia. So as Rabbi Yeshua says the following, Talmidei Beis Shammai Amdu Lahem Lamata. The students of Beis Shammai stood downstairs. And they began to slaughter the Talmidim of Beit Hillel. Tani Shisha Mehem Alu, six of them went upstairs. Bahashar Amdu Alehim, and the others stood over them. Bacharevot Uberamachim. With swords. Charevot and Charevot and Charevamachim. With swords and spears. Meaning, the debates in the Machloket had passed over from being a debate about ideas to a debate about survival. And they were actually killing each other. And this is what we call Sinat Chinam. Sinat Chinam is not people just saying, you know, I don't like you for no reason. Baseless hatred. There's no such thing as baseless hatred. No one ever walked up to me in the street and said, I hate you. Why? No reason. Like, that's not mentally stable, you know. People always hate for a reason. Sinat Chinam is when the hatred spills over from being discussion about ideas or disagreement about issues, and it becomes personal to the point of actual violence as well. And even if it doesn't get to violence, it can become violent. What were these 18 things that they were pushing through on that day? And it's very interesting. I heard Rav Herschel Schachter from YU talking about this once. The 18 things that they were... This was as the Jewish people were disintegrating. There was the beginning of the revolt against the Romans, and society was breaking down on all fronts. This is a good time of year to read up on Rabbi Wein's books. Are excellent. There are other books which are excellent. There's a book out there I saw, The Temple in Flames. That's a good book. I've been reading that as well. What did Beis Shammai feel the need to pass through legislation in the Jewish people? So look at 22. Shmona Asa Dava Gazru. What were the 22 things? 18 things. My Nihu, what are they, says the Gemara. Shmona Asa Dava, what are these 18 things? And it gives you examples. I'm not going through them all. Elu Poislim Esa Truma. They're things which invalidate Truma. Truma is food which is set aside for the Kohanim. Ha Oichel Oichel Rishon. If you eat food which is Tame on a primary level. Ha'ochel ochel sheni, or a secondary level. Ha'shotim mashkin tamei, if you drink tamei liquid on a Torah level, if you drink or eat something tamei, it doesn't make you tamei. So Beis Shammai felt the need to extend the laws of Tumah and Tara, to make chumras in the areas of Tumah and Tara, to widen the ambit of the halacha. And Rav Herschel Schachter pointed out once, and he said, society's falling apart. People are killing each other in the street. And what's important? To make chumras in Tumah and Tahara. This is not said necessarily as a praise. This is said as a, like, how could this be? How could this be the focus of the Jewish people? And if you don't think that that's the way to interpret it, look at 23. Tan Rabbanan, Gemara in Yuma. Ma'aseh b'shnei kohanim shehayu shneihem shavim. They remember what they used to do. They used to have a race to get up the ramp, to see who would get to the ramp first. To the top first, and they would be the one that would lead the beginning of the service in the temple. Shehayu shneim shavim, there were two kohanim who were equal at the ramp. Veratzim, okay? Ve'olim bekevish, they were running. up the kevesh, up the ramp. Kadam echad mehem. One of them began to edge in front of the other in the race. The toch arba amos el chaveru. He came up just behind him. Natal sakin. The other one took a knife. V'taka lo beliboy and thrust it in his chest. He's not going to win the race. He's going to fall down. He thrust the knife in his chest. Ba aviv shel tinok. The father of the injured and almost dying Cohen runs up. His son is lying in the throes of death. Umatashihu mefarper. He found his son twitching just before he died. Amar, what did the father of the dead son say? Harihu kaparaschem. Don't worry. There's a kapara. Adain b'ni mefarper. My son is still twitching. V'loi nitma hafsakin. The knife isn't tameh. The knife isn't tameh. Baruch Hashem, we didn't bring tumah into the temple. Says the Gemara, Lelam decha shekasha alein taras kelim yosem ishvichas. This is very scary. That they'd lost the plot so much, they'd lost the focus so much, that the focus on tumah and tara had become primary, and the basic bein adam lechavero had become secondary. This is why the Second Temple was destroyed. And when you now look at the sources that deal with that, you'll understand them in a greater light. Let's do the last three sources and then we'll finish. Look over on page 4.
What number?
24, over the page. On page 4, and we'll see some well-known but nevertheless quite moving sources. First of all, 24, you know full well. Mikdash Sheni, in the Second Temple, says the Gemara. Shehaya oiskin b'Torah. They learned Torah. Mitzvahs. And they did mitzvahs. It wasn't like in the first temple where people were just doing avodah zarah. They were big frumas in the second temple. Ugimilus chasadim. And they were kind. They helped each other. Nifnei melcharav. So why was it destroyed? Nifnei shehaisa bo sinat chinam. Very famous. Because of the sinat chinam. And the Netziv, in his introduction to Bereishis, picks up on this. The Netziv who wrote the Ha'emek Davar on the Chumash. And he quotes the following. He asks from Parshat Ha'azinu, which is my bar mitzvah parsha actually. Not that that's relevant, but it is. 25, he says as follows. The Ha'inyan, the Nidbar B'Shirat Ha'azinu. I'm going to explain to you what it means in Ha'azinu. Ala Pasuk, when it says in the verse, Hatzur Tamim Palo. God is the rock whose actions are Tamim. Zemi Ha'azinu, Zemi Chumash. Hatzur, tamim palo, ulagam betilim, aval vaday bahazinu. Tzadik v'yashar hu. Why is God yashar and tzadik? Says the Nitzan. The shevach yashar, v'shvach v'yashar, praising God for being straight, for being honest, for being truthful. Hu nem ala hatzik dena kodesh baruch b'chur b'mayisheni. It's there to show that we understand that God was justified in destroying the second temple. Shehayador ikesh uftaltal, which is the next line in Ha'azinu, because it was a twisted generation. Ikesh uftaltal, taftal means crooked generation. Upirashnu, and we explain the following: Shehayu tzadikim, they were tzadikim, v'chasidim, v'amlei Torah. Ach loy hayu yusharim, but they weren't yashar. As Rav Hirsch would say, glatt kosher has to be accompanied with glatt yashar. Has to be glatt yashar, not just glatt kosher. In the way that they dealt with people, they weren't yashar. Therefore, alkein mipnei sinat chinam shebelibam zeh. Because of the sinat chinam they had for each other, chashdu they suspected it misharau shenoyv shalai bedatam. Someone who wasn't following their opinion biyirat Hashem. He wasn't good enough for them. We don't like the way you live your life in hashkofa, whatever yirashamayim. Shehut stuki, they call him a Sadducee, the Apikoros. They threw the words around, Apikorosim, Sadducee, etc. Everybody's an Apikoros. You know the Pashkavilim on the wall? Nobody's wrong. Everyone's an Apikoros. You can't just be wrong, you have to be an Apikoros. Ubao alideze, lide shvichas damim, bederech aflaga. This led to the most extreme violence. Lakala rosha ba'olam, and all the terrible things in the world, ad shecharav habayis, until the temple was destroyed. The alzer hayad siduk hadin, and that's why we say to God, this was fair. Shehakadosh Baruch Hu yashar hu. Hashem is yashar. The eino sovel tzadikim ke'elu. You want to be a tzadik? Nice. But HaKadosh Baruch Hu cannot stand tzaddikim like this. Ela ba'oifin shehochim b'deres yashar, they have to go b'yashar, gam b'halichas oilam, v'loi b'akmimos, and they can't be twisted, afal gam shehu l'shem shamayim. Even though you're l'shem shamayim, everybody's l'shem shamayim. It's not good enough. It doesn't help to be l'shem shamayim. You see here, it's not good enough to say the machloik is l'shem shamayim. It also has to be in a way which is without the sinat chinam, okay? The zeh gorim churban habriya v'arisus yishuv haaretz. And the Netziv wrote in number 26, he wrote in his tshuvot, in a response to an article in number 26 that was written saying how we need to pull away from the non-religious people in society. Don't forget that Netziv is living in the mid-1800s. Reform, Haskalah are very strong already by the 1860s. And the Netziv is talking about how to deal with these people. And the Netziv says, V'hine, HaMa'arich, which is the editor of this journal he's responding to, Hora v'hoga eitza liyos nishma midorazeh. We have to stay away from these people, the non-religious people. L'havrid zemizeh, to separate from the people. L'gamre, completely. K'mo shenifrad Avraham milot. Just like Avraham pulled away and separated from Lot. V'metuta min HaMa'arich, I beg of the editor, eitza zekashe charevot. Laguf. This advice to pull away from the non-religious Jewish world is like swords in the body of the Ummah, of the people, the Kiyumah, and its continuation. At the time that we lived in our own land, and we were almost independent. The Baisheni, okay? Nitam Eretz v'charav ha'bayis, that the land was destroyed and the house and the Beis HaMikdash was destroyed. V'gala Yisrael, the Sivas Machlekes HaPerushim, im HaTzedukim, because of the Pharisees, the Sadducees. V'gam ha'sev machmas sinat chinam, because of all the sinat chinam, har v'shvichas damim, that caused shvichas damim, mashe'ein min hadin, more than could ever be justified. Hainu b'shah shira perush, if a Pharisee saw, she'echav mekel, be'ezedava, someone was lenient in some issue, Afar Gashaloi Hayatstuki, of course this other person wasn't a heretic, really. Klal at all. Ela as Avera, he just did an Avera. Okay, there's lots of people in the world. Anybody in the world who didn't do an Avera? Ain't Sadik Baretz, there's no such thing as someone who did. Exactly, everybody had something that they need to do tshuva for. Mikol makom machma sinas chinam haya shoita, they would be judgmental. Let tzeduki say he were they were tzeduki shemoridim osa, and the halacha is once you call someone a tzeduki, you can throw them into the river because they're an apikoros. Once you classify somebody as an apikoros, then they don't need any ben adam lechaveru. Umizeh nisra b'shlichas damim beheta, they gave a het to the shlichas damim ulashem sham ulashem mitzvah and the shem mitzvah, but it was all a terrible mistake. Because there ain't rachuch min adat, and he said it's not too far for me to establish, to imagine the hagiachas v'shalom be'ed kazot, so we could come to this situation. Gam came asher afal pi raot einay echad mimachziki hadat. Even though somebody would see someone keeping religion, yidme sheploini einu mitnaheg al pi darko, see someone else who doesn't fit his way, ba'avodas Hashem, v'yishpateno leminutz, and could judge him as an apikoros, v'yisrachik mimenu, and pull away from him, v'yuroifim ze'ezeh, and people will begin to pursue each other, beheta, and they justified, v'dimion kozev chas v'sholem, v'shichei kol am Hashem chalila, and we could destroy the Jewish people, afilu im hayinu ba'arseinu u'b'rushaseinu. Even if we managed to get our own land back one day, and this was in the mid-19th century when it was a dream unfulfilled. Even if we got back to Eretz Israel, if we don't learn the lessons of what happened the last time we were here, then history could, chalila, repeat itself. Now, this is very strong stuff. And by the way, Rav Kook, who was a Talmud Muvhak of the Netziv, expands this idea in Orot, and he talks about the fact that the way to glue the Jewish people together is to try and bring all these factions in Eretz Israel together, the Haredi world and the secular Le'umi world and the religious Zionist world, etc. And he talks about that at length. For our purposes, apart from being important limud for us during the 9 days, this is critical in this course. Why? Because we now have a situation where the Sanhedrin is no longer functioning. You have factions, each paskining halacha in their own way, and everybody will realize that there has to be a new system. And we will see next time how the realization after the Churban that we can no longer have this factionalization led to a new system which we later call the Talmud, which brought all of these debates together again, not into a Sanhedrin this time, because we no longer had land, but into a new book, which became a unified Torah Shabbat Pass to the Jewish people. But it grew out of the experience of Vayesheni, and next time, Be'ezrat Hashem, we will look in detail at how that happened and how the Talmud became what it is today. Yes.